BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
First, all week we're taking a look at the future for our peatlands. In many parts of the country, lowland peat is drained and used as a valuable medium for growing vegetables and other crops. But this degrades the peat and emits carbon. Farmers in Germany are developing something called paludiculture. That is, using re-wetted peatlands to grow water-tolerant vegetation, which also has a market. A company called Wetland Products is growing bulrushes, also called typha, in water-covered peat and turning it into housing insulation, takeaway food packaging and compost for commercial growers. Bulrushes and reeds also clean up the excess nutrients in the water where they grow. I visited the Norfolk Broads to meet the company's founder, Aldert van Veeren, and to see a site where paludiculture is now being tried out.
We concentrate on cattail, which has in English bulrush. It's the one with the big cigars in there when it's flowering.
You've actually brought along a piece of this typha.
This plant grows in the water. It's a root which is constantly growing, never stops. We are now in winter, and as you can see, there is already
two, three inches of shoot coming off.
They can have a huge production, which can be up to 3 or 4 times the amount of biomass which a wood is creating in a year. So you have a renewable crop from which you can make building products, which also stocks a lot of carbon dioxide. And you're not emitting carbon dioxide from the peat anymore. This is a plant, with a big future.
We're heading off into the Broads now and into the field. We're on the Horsey estate, which is quite famous because the Horsey windmill is one of the central places that people come to visit when they see the Broads. Today it's very cold and very windy as well. I'm with Andrea Kelly. And Andrea is the Environment Policy Advisor for the Broads National Park.
What we've done is we've created a 1.5 hectare demonstration because, you know, paludiculture is in its infancy. We need to engage with people, we need to convince farmers that there is an economy that's worth them putting their time and their thoughts into.
We're just walking through actually area here, typical with oilseed rape. There will be sugar beet here as well. So this is peat land that's been drained so it can grow crops.
It's critical that if we work anywhere on land management change, it has to be on peatlands, and we have to secure water sources, raise water tables, but we have to find a viable economics, different crops, different systems to allow farmers to continue to farm. Conservation bodies don't own the Broads, it's owned by farmers, and they need to have an alternative income.
I'm Damon Bridge, I work on the Somerset Levels and Moors with the RSPB. The thing that's really exciting is the potential for typha to strip phosphorus. Growing blocks of typha is one of the most effective way, and a regular harvest of typha will get rid of that phosphorus and improve the water quality.
Tim Papworth is local farmer. Why have you come along?
Within my contract farms, I have one that's a peatland farm. I'm interested because I'm not the landowner, I'm a tenant on that farm. So therefore, how does that work out for the carbon credits? Who gets them? Obviously, carbon is owned by the landlord, and I'm the tenant, but if I'm doing the work to create the carbon, then...
As a tenant, you don't know whether you will benefit from all that.
Baroness Rock was saying that she thinks it should be that the landowner and the tenant share it equally. The other thing is the extended producer responsibilities now that came in January. Anyone that's growing fruit and veg and packing it have got there's a tax and a liability on what. Sorry, it's very windy here. Yeah, the packaging costs, the plastic, the paper, the glass, the whatever it might be, and this can help solve some of that because it's actually a reusable form of packaging as well. We've just seen some, and the trays and things, then wow, you think if you can make reusable packaging out of a product that you can grow. And then of course after that there's the improving the water that we've just been talking about. There's so many different angles. That's why I'm interested.
Well, that was Tim Papworth. He's just one of the many farmers growing food crops on drained lowland peat. At the moment, 90% of the UK's lowland peat is drained for agriculture. But farmers and scientists are working together to see if they can change the way farming food is done on these sensitive sites to prevent carbon emissions and preserve more peatland. A collaboration called Fenland Soil has been set up in Cambridgeshire to try out new, wetter farming techniques. Megan Hudson is their general manager.
The emissions from this area are higher than we would like them to be, but Fenland Soil has been set up and we're working with all of the key experts in this area to address those and really understand firstly what those emissions are and what they are for different farming systems, but also what's achievable in terms of where we can get them to and what's realistic in terms of keeping our production at the level that we need it to be to feed the country, but also to reduce these emissions and not just offshore the problem or send the problem somewhere else.
So what have you tried out?
In terms of actual solutions, we're looking at irrigation management, for example. Instead of just re-wetting fields, we're looking at ways that we can manage and dampen emissions from the top down. We're looking at different regenerative practices that might work well with the soil types we've got, different cover crops we can use, lay periods, minimising cultivations, tillage, those kind of things.
And what about re-wetting? Can you grow the crops that you grow already in peat, which is wetter than it is at the moment?
So to a point, we could probably raise the water table slightly from where we are at the moment, but not kind of to the levels of a re-wetted peat. So we wouldn't be able to grow the crops that we're growing and certainly wouldn't be able to traffic fields in water tables of 30 centimetres or higher. We'd be looking at kind of needing to reduce that down to a sort of a higher level than what it is today, but not necessarily that 10 to 30 centimetres that's being advised.
So you could still grow in that top bit, but have it wetter underneath.
Yeah, so raising that water table up does provide some carbon savings. Obviously not quite as extreme as completely re-wetting, but it does provide some benefits in terms of reducing those emissions for sure.
Now, the demonstration site that I saw at Horsey, which we just heard about, that can provide significant products. For instance, you can make takeaway packaging, you can make housing insulation, or even compost for horticulture. So is there an argument for re-wetting some of the areas of peatland that's used for growing food so that it can produce a different sort of crop?
Yeah, there definitely is. So we're looking actually at developing a farmer-led project that's looking basically at how we can create a mosaic of land management practices across the fens. So having areas that we will re-wet, but also having these other areas where actually we continue producing those food crops that have always historically been here in the fens.
Megan Hudson there.